This is Matt Wells at UN News. A year has now passed since the government of Yemen and Houthi rebels met in Sweden for UN-sponsored talks aimed at ending a brutal conflict that's generated the world's worst humanitarian crisis. In an exclusive interview with UN News, UN Special Envoy Martin Griffiths has been reflecting on achievements since the signing of the Stockholm Agreement, which included key elements such as the establishment of a demilitarised zone around the port city of Hodeidah, Yemen's gateway for goods and aid, as well as prisoner exchanges. Mr. Griffiths said the path to peace requires warring parties to abandon hopes for a military victory and instead pursue the huge victory that can be gained through negotiation. He told Maher Yaqub that this shift is happening in Yemen, although more could be done towards fully implementing the accord.
We also believed, coming out of Sweden, that the element of the Stockholm Agreement which covered Hodeidah, the port city up on the Red Sea coast of Yemen, the humanitarian entry point for the humanitarian program in Yemen, was saved from a dreadful battle. Now, you rightly point out the fact that many people, and I'm one of them, believe we could have done a much better job of implementing the Stockholm Agreement in this 12 months. And it has been, for many of us, but particularly for the people in Yemen, for whom it's a primary issue, a disappointment in many, many ways. Yes, certainly there have been achievements. There was a prospect at that time of an attack on the city and ports of Hodeidah, a battle for those two vital hubs of the humanitarian program. It was avoided. It still has been avoided. There has been a ceasefire, more or less implemented in Hodeidah. People's lives have been saved. The humanitarian program has been protected. And I think it also showed that the parties could actually agree on a different way out of a crisis. But it's true, there are things which should have gone much better. We still have yet to see major redeployments to demilitarize the city of Hodeidah. That hasn't happened. We're still negotiating it. Prisoner release, we've had grave disappointments over this year. True, recently we saw 120, 130 prisoners released, and that was a great step forward, but it hasn't been enough. So I think the Stockholm Agreement, yes, we came out with a great sense of hope, hope dashed in many ways, but also some considerable achievements.
We cannot forget the humanitarian crisis that Yemenis are suffering from. Yemen continues to be the worst humanitarian crisis in the world. This dire situation is contributing to skepticism in certain circles about the possibility of a political solution. How do you see the prospect of peace in Yemen now compared to 1 year ago when the agreement was signed?
Well, for me, the humanitarian situation doesn't give me skepticism about the prospects for peace. It does the opposite. And if there is any argument in favor of the need for speed towards a political solution to this war, it is those people who daily suffer from the effects of conflict. Families whose children haven't been to school for 5 years, families who have struggled to get food on the plates on a daily basis. That will tell us we need a political solution. It shouldn't make us skeptical about it. But any political solution anywhere in any conflict, and I have had the perhaps awful privilege of a lifetime of being confronted by conflicts, is immensely difficult. It requires political will of a level which is so much more demanding than in any other thing. To move from war to peace requires those who lead in war to change the way they look at their constituencies, to change the way they look at the potential, to end their hopes for military victory, and to begin actually reaching out to their enemies and to make them part of the future. It's a huge shift in any civil war. It's a massive shift. What I believe is happening now in Yemen is that at last in Yemen, we're beginning to see that shift take place. We're beginning to see in the hearts and minds of those who make decisions about the war, the desire to make peace and the recognition at a fundamental level that there is no prospect for military advantage, that there is nothing to be won on the battlefield, and that there is a huge victory, of course, to be made in the terrain of negotiation.
To follow up on what you said, we have Riyadh agreement. We have been seeing reports that the implementation is not going as well as originally planned. Do you think this will affect your hope for the parties to start formal peace talks?
I think it's really important that agreement is, in its basics at least, implemented. And like you, we're all worried as to whether it will or won't. But you know, all agreements provide for very clear timelines for A to happen, or B to happen, or C to happen. And in real life, things don't go quite according to plan, as you know. So I think it's a bit early yet to say that this agreement is not working. But I was in touch as I was coming to New York with senior officials in the Saudi government about the prospects for implementing the Riyadh agreement. Of course, they mediated it. And they assure me that they're on it. And more importantly, I think we can see that there is interest in both the government of Yemen and the Southern Transitional Council in making it work, perhaps not in all its aspects, but in enough to allow us in our UN process to mediate an end to the overall conflict. So the Riyadh agreement gives us time, we hope, but if it falls apart, I think it will be a devastating blow to Yemen.
In your latest Security Council briefing, as in the previous briefings, you spoke about women's involvement in peace-building efforts and initiatives. Could you tell us a bit more about the work your office is doing to include women and other constituencies in the peace process in Yemen?
In every conflict in the world, frankly, it's not even a conflict issue, it's a life issue. Inclusion of women, of youth, of the marginalized, of the excluded, of those who don't have the right to make decisions about other people's lives. All these people need not just to be consulted in some way or other, it's very difficult, isn't it? But need to have a sense that whatever is agreed for them on their behalf are agreements which actually reflect their interests. And if we don't do that, these will not be sustainable agreements. There's so much evidence around the world of that. So this is not some kind of great altruism. This is self-interest, that agreements need to be based on proper inclusion. Women in Yemen have a phenomenal record. The National Dialogue in Yemen was driven in many respects by the participation of women. 30% levels of representation of women in many of those fora was achieved. And we need, we being the people of Yemen and us to help them, need to revisit that, need to get back to that level of representation. In terms of my office, we have a women's advisory group, which is part of the way in which we look at issues and which will come to all the talks when we get back to them. But perhaps just as importantly, perhaps more importantly than that, what we need with the help and advice of women's groups and the women's movement is to try to make sure that in any peace agreement, it provides for adequate and hopefully powerful women's and civil society roles in the transition that will then come. The power of transition and the relevance of transition after a civil war is that it allows those who have been marginalized by the war, who are not part of those who make decisions about how to conduct a war, women are an obvious example, to get back to their place in the center of public life. So as much as anything else, we need to be held to account, the parties, and indeed us as their mediator, that these provisions will be made in that agreement.
My final question would be about you. You have an extensive experience in the field of mediation and conflict resolution from different perspectives. In your role in Yemen and generally, are you still learning things?
Yeah, and I hope to God I am learning things, because that would be dead if I wasn't. Every conflict is the same in civil wars, and every conflict is different. If you go to, in my experience, you go to a place with a civil war, and I once went to a country and I said, you know, these are very familiar issues that you're facing. And I think it was the deputy prime minister in that country was saying to me, you're completely wrong. Ours is unique. All conflicts are unique, just as we all are unique, obviously. But they also share a lot of issues. What is so fascinating about Yemen is the character of its people, because you see in the character of its people a desire to be able to talk to each other, to be able to open up to each other. The sort of thing which, if we see this shift, this pivot towards a political solution, I am sure that the current social media and commentary, which is so polarized and so critical of the other, will shift rather quickly in Yemen to one which embraces the other. So yes, I'm learning. The second thing I might say is this. I think for a United Nations official who hadn't the privilege to do something like this. We always need to combine the impact of our values, which include inclusion, which include universal rights and so forth, and the relevance of regional diplomacy, diplomatic opportunity, interests, and requirements from member states, and balancing those two, in effect balancing diplomacy with mediation, is for a United Nations official, I think, a special opportunity. And God knows, if you can't learn from that, then you can't learn from anything.